This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In the winter of 2009, retired general contractor Donald Burke of Ware, New Hampshire, was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Over the next few years, he and his wife Marjorie chronicled their outings in the countryside, the night terrors and falls, and the instability and emotional ups and downs. When asked to describe the disease, he said it was like standing on melting ice. Marjorie uses a different analogy, shifting sand. And that is the title of their book, Melting Ice, Shifting Sand, One Couple's Journey with Alzheimer's Disease. Donald is now living in a dementia care unit, but Marjorie is here with us to talk about their journey together and the process of caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's. Marjorie, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here with you.
Well, both you and Donald wrote chapters for this book before the disease made it too difficult for him to participate.
Yes.
Now, you tell us that you did a lot of your writing in the cafe at Gibson's bookstore. So what did that process look like for him? Was he writing on his own?
No, he'd be at home with a caregiver. It was part of Marjorie's Monday, my 5 hours of respite for myself. And when he would write, it would be more him telling me, and I would sit at my computer and write down his words and what he was saying and try to analyze how he was feeling. And then I'd flesh it out a little more and read it back to him. And he would either tell me, yes, that's what I said, that's what I mean, or no, change it this way or that way. So while he didn't actually have a pen and a paper or his fingers on a keyboard, those are his words that he gave to me.
And were you hoping to get his feelings, what was going on for him as it was fading, I'm sure?
Yes. I asked the question, what's it like for you? Because I wanted to know myself how it was affecting him and then what I needed to do to be a better caregiver.
How long have you been married?
57 years this week.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Well, it does read like a kind of diary, a journal, you know. Was this something that you thought of as a journey day by day?
No, I started writing a journal right when he was diagnosed, just for myself, to see what was happening, what the changes were, how I was feeling. And then when I did ask him that question in 2012, I thought, oh, I've got to pursue this. I didn't intend to write a book. It was just more to bring the two of us closer together and for me to understand better how it was affecting him.
Well, and he tells us who he is. I'm sure you know after 57 years of marriage who he is.
Yeah.
But he lets us know he can be stubborn.
Oh, yes, he can be very stubborn.
What were some of the ways that that challenged him, the stubbornness?
One of the most glaring things was his using his walker. He does not like to use a walker. That's for old people, he'll tell me. And he's not old, even though he is 84 years old. And so he'd begin to call me the warden because I was after him to do things that he didn't want to do. And his stubbornness would get the better of him.
Yeah.
And one of the more recent episodes with his walker has happened since he's been living in a facility. He was mad at the staff because they wanted him to use his walker. He went in his room, shut the door, and locked it, and said, no women allowed. So when I arrived to visit, they warned me he was grouchy, and I thought, oh, great. And they unlocked his door, and I went in, and he forgot he was grumpy because he was so happy to see me.
Mm, well.
He has a great sense of humor, and I think that has helped him through this a lot. He can make funny out of nothing.
That's a skill we all could use.
Yes.
Well, as you looked for ways to connect with him and to stay active, you continued to go on these little mini trips, little dates, you know, to the Concord Farmers Markets, to concerts. King Arthur Flower stops by the Kentuckook River. Reading about your outings, it feels like a kind of celebration of New Hampshire. And it made me wonder how much memory is tied to place for you and for Donald.
I think a great deal is. Because when I show him pictures in, you know, family pictures or just pictures in a book of nature, he will connect with a place that he remembers or something that takes him back to his job. He owned a construction company for a long time, a family business. And he can connect quite well with things like that. But they're long-term memories that are hardwired. Mm-hmm. It's the immediate day-to-day things. 5 minutes after we've talked about something, he'll ask me the same question again. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stay.
My mother has Alzheimer's.
I'm sorry.
My father, when she was first diagnosed, said that all of these parts of her past, you know, the things that used to make her angry or upset, they were fading away. And he said, it's like I'm falling in love with her all over again, which was so touching. Makes me want to cry now. But
that's all right. Tears are okay.
but that also that we become the vessels for their memory in some kind of way.
Yes.
You know, so what does that do for you? What kind of position does that put you in?
Sometimes difficult if I have to make little lies or fiblets about, you know, he'll want to know how so-and-so is, especially my parents and his parents. And he doesn't understand that they've died long ago. And so, yeah, they're okay. I just saw them the other day, or things are all right. So that's hard. But the connections when he remembers something special that we've done over the years, or something funny, those are very precious moments to me.
I want to go back to the funny, because there are parts that would be very funny if they weren't so sad.
Yes.
Like when you decided to sleep in separate beds after Donald started talking and thrashing in his sleep. He thought you were a squirrel.
Yeah.
In the bed.
I got kicked out of bed many a night, or I got whacked across the head when he thought he was chasing squirrels, but it was me. And then the funny thing that goes along with that, he likes to whistle. And so in his sleep, he started whistling, which didn't make for a very good night's sleep for me. So I did have to move across the hall.
Well, there's a poem that you have about leaving the bed.
So this is called From There to Here. How did I get from there to here? What prompted this move that feels so strange? From there across the hall to here? I no longer sleep there with him. Instead, I sleep alone over here. My beloved thrashes all night and talks in gibberish a lot. Too many times he thought I was a squirrel in need of attack. Whack across my body. A rude awakening at 2 a.m. From queen-sized luxury there with eiderdown to keep us both warm, I've been demoted to orphan status here in a trundle twin bed, or so it feels when I'm alone. A black woolen camp blanket does nothing to soothe my longing soul. But now we both enjoy eiderdown over there and over here. New bed linens brighten my mood. My soul begins to sing again. But I'm still here instead of there.
It's Marjorie Burke reading from her memoir, Melting Ice, Shifting Sand. She and her husband began the memoir, One Couple's Journey with Alzheimer's Disease. Donald is now living in dementia care unit here in New Hampshire. There's a phrase that you use in the book many times. You say the essential Donald. You know, this idea that even as he is changing, there is still this essential Donald there.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
The real Donald is still there. It's deep inside. And it's a wonderful moment for me when I can connect with that, or he can find that, especially with his humor. But just those moments when the real Donald that I fell in love with a long time ago emerges. I get a smile, or he squeezes my hand, or something like that. Or just says something that brings back a memory. Mm. Like recently, I took him to the eye doctor for his annual exam. And he started talking to all the people in the office about Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts. And he and his company did a lot of work at Perkins School for the Blind back in the late 60s, early 70s. He was telling people about working at the School for the Blind, but he was having his eyes examined. He made that connection. So that was a very special moment for me. I just knew, okay, my guy's still there.
His passage did become more difficult. I'm thinking of, you know, the frustrations he had with his cane and the walker and the dizziness he experiences.
Yes.
How about for you? How did the writing change for you over the years as you were working on this book?
It was very therapeutic. At times it was very hard, and I would sit in front of the computer and cry. But I persevered.
There's a lot here about, you know, you finding your own center. And I think this is one of the things that becomes very clear in caring for someone with Alzheimer's, especially for the primary caregiver, that you need care yourself.
Exactly.
You know, you need to go to the well for yourself and replenish.
Right. I started out by taking a program called Powerful Tools for Caregivers that the Concord VNA offers. And out of that, the women, mostly women, that took this course formed a support group, and that support group still goes on. We meet twice a month, and we sit around with coffee and cookies and talk and share and laugh and cry. And then from there, I realized that I needed more help than that. I started reading a lot about the disease. I found the Memory Cafe at Granite Ledges, which is a fabulous program for both caregivers and care receivers. And then I found the Currier Museum of Art in Manchester also has a memory cafe where a similar format of refreshments and socializing, and then looking at art and trying to see what we see in the picture, what's going on, what do you think these people are doing? Why are they dressed that way? And the arts are the last of the senses that people with dementia lose. And so this is extremely beneficial for both the care receiver and the caregiver. Mm. And one of the funniest, again, here's where the essential Donald came through one day at the Courier. The theme for the day was architecture and buildings. And the first picture they put up on the screen for us to look at was the Colosseum in Rome. He looked at it and said, "Oh, that won't pass OSHA." And then I had to figure out, well, what am I going to do on my Marjorie's Monday? No doctor's appointments, no grocery shopping. What do I need for myself? And writing was part of it. Going and sitting by water, I find that very meaningful and restorative. Or going and sitting and looking off in the distance at the hills and mountains that surround us here in New Hampshire. And my faith, that's been very important to both of us.
Looks like both of you have been very, very active in the Episcopal Church.
We have.
For many, many years.
Yes.
But you reminded me when you talked about the art museum that one of the last things to deteriorate for many people with Alzheimer's is this appreciation of art and music.
Yes.
And you are just a regular couple. I mean, you're smart, you're active, you're interesting, you know, you have good lives, good families. Is it hard to put that out there in the world? You know, this thing that we would never regularly see as we pass someone sitting there picnicking by the Kentucky River.
Yes. I think we're woefully behind in recognizing and supporting families that are dealing with this. There are a host of resources out there, but there's not enough. And we're 5.4 million people in the country right now with Alzheimer's, and that number is only going to grow, and eventually it's going to bankrupt us in terms of care. So I think it's important for communities to begin to look at what they can do for their next-door neighbor or somebody at their church who's going through this, and not be afraid to ask, is there something I can do to help you? I might not want to come and sit with your loved one because I wouldn't know how to talk to him or her, but could I grocery shop for you, or could I pull weeds in your garden, or things like that. And I think for the most part, the caregiver would be more than grateful for that kind of offering from friends and neighbors. And so I think there's a lot of things people in our small towns around New Hampshire can do to help. And I think this is where some of the educational programs that the VNA offers are very beneficial, because they're doing a lot in terms of healthcare and community resources and services.
Well, Marjorie, thank you very much for giving us a glimpse.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Marjorie Burke, she and her husband Donald are co-authors of Melting Ice, Shifting Sand, One Couple's Journey with Alzheimer's Disease.